You're listening to A-State Connections on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves. As we continue with our second part of our four-part interview series with Dr. Ruth Hawkins from Arkansas State University, she talks about how she started working on the Arkansas State University heritage sites, as well as the Arkansas Delta byways. She says the first project was the Hemingway Pfeiffer Museum and Educational Center in Piggott. So let's talk about Piggott. Okay. Was that the first one that you started?
That was the first one.
Tell us about how did you, with all the research in that, how did you develop it to what it was then to what it is today?
Well, that's a good question. And really, I credit the work that we did there with why we have been successful at the other sites, because we made some really good decisions there. When we acquired the property, at the time, I didn't know much of anything about restoration or preservation. I had, when we lived in Virginia, I had restored a house that we lived in Virginia, but restoring a private house is a little bit different, you know, than doing a facility.
Sure.
And so Claudia Shannon, who lives here in Jonesboro, had done a lot of preservation work with Main Street Arkansas and other programs. She's an interior designer. And so we hired her as our restoration director, and I began working with Claudia. And Claudia taught me some real important lessons, because one of the principles that she used was that we're not going to do anything unless we can verify it from three different sources, which was great for a university because we couldn't just accept things at face value. We had to investigate those things. And so, like, for instance, we wanted to restore it back to the same colors that were in the house when Ernest Hemingway was there. Well, how do you do that? Well, first of all, we did core samples in each room of the house, and we sent them off to a lab on the East Coast where they did a scientific analysis and came up with every layer of paint color that had been there.
Mm-hmm.
We did oral history interviews with people that had lived in the house. Like, there were, at that time, there were still two live-in maids that were still living that had been there during the time that Ernest Hemingway was there. And they remembered, you know, well, this room was this color and this room was this color. And then visual inspection and helped us because, like, for instance, we took out the radiators to restore the radiators. They had been kind of a gold gilded paint. And when we took those out, behind the radiators, we found an original paint color. And we could document about when that paint color was there, because one of the housekeepers that was there the year that Ernest Hemingway first came there said the radiators were not there when she was there. The other housekeeper, who came in about 1932, said that they were there when she was there. So we knew that that had happened somewhere in that time period. Well, it just so happens that what we had found visually, what we had been told in oral histories, and what the scientific evidence had told us all came up with the same colors. So we know that those are the right colors. And we decided we would not lift a hammer or drive a nail unless we knew that what we were doing was the right thing to do to restore that piece of property. And as a result, it became known as probably the most authentic restoration in the state at the time. And that's when we started getting calls from all of these other communities and even from the Department of Arkansas Heritage saying, hey, can you take on this other project?
Dr. Ruth Hawkins is a director of Arkansas State University's Heritage Sites and also is the executive director of Arkansas Delta Byways and joins us here on KASU. So let's talk about how long did it take for you to be able to work on the Piggott project there, the Hemingway project?
Okay, well, we acquired that property in the spring of 1997, and we did the restoration. It took us, well, actually, the first year of the restoration, we did very little of anything on the actual house. In fact, the people in Piggott were saying, well, what, are they going to do anything with that house or not? But it took us a whole year of research because we wanted to know, all about the family, how they'd lived in the house, how they had used the house, everything we could find out about the house before we started. So, as I said, we acquired it in 97. We had our grand opening on July 4th of 1999. And that was really rushing it. I learned quickly that we didn't rush any of our other restorations like we did that. But we wanted to open in 1999 because that was Ernest Hemingway's 100th birthday. And by then, we had established sort of a loose relationship with all of the other Hemingway sites. The place in Oak Park, Oak Park, Illinois, where Hemingway was born. The house that he and Pauline Pfeiffer lived in Key West. The house in Cuba. We had been to Cuba and visited with the people in Cuba. But we had all decided, Ernest Hemingway's birthday was July 21st, his 100th birthday in 1999. And we all decided that during the month of July, we would all do some sort of activity related to Hemingway. And so ours kicked it off on the 4th of July in conjunction with that holiday. And everybody remembers it to this day because it was 103 degrees, I think, and we had it outside. And everybody remembers that sweltering day in Piggott.
But it sounds fantastic. Yeah. So with that, what was the next project after that? You said you had several communities and all that saying, hey, come take a look at these things. What was the next project?
Well, we had two that kind of came along at the same time. One that came along a little later but opened earlier. The next one was the Lakeport Plantation. And we were talking with the director and the deputy director at the Department of Arkansas Heritage. And we were talking about the Piggott restoration because they had had such a role in that, because some of the money that we got for that was through the Arkansas Natural and Cultural Resources Council, which is pretty much administered through the Department of Arkansas Heritage and Parks and Tourism and so forth. Mm-hmm. So we were talking to them about that, and they just casually said, well, we sure wish you'd take a look at our favorite project in the state. And we said, well, what's, and I was there at the time with Les Wyatt. And so they said to Les and I, we really wish you'd take on this project. And we said, well, what is it? And they said, well, it's called the Lakeport Plantation, and we really consider that the jewel of the Delta. And it's privately owned, though, and so we've not been able to do anything. And that immediately piqued our interest, and I came back home and I called Claudia and I said, hey, I think there's another project and that's available. And I said, we really can't get interested in it, because this was like several months before we had opened the Hemingway Pfeiffer project. This was in probably the spring of 99, and as I said, we opened in July of 99. And so I told Claudia, I said, well, we can't possibly take on this other project, but this might be something that you would be interested in. So she immediately sent a friend of hers, who is also an interior designer, over to Lakeport to check it out. And she came back and said, oh my gosh, you've got to do something with this property, because it was the last remaining plantation home on the Mississippi River here in Arkansas. Lots of plantation homes existed in Louisiana and Mississippi, but none in Arkansas. They'd all either fallen into the river, or they'd burned, or they'd rotted down because they were built of wood instead of brick. And so this was the last one, and it still had a lot of its original finishes. And so Claudia put together a statewide team of people that had been interested in this property for years. And they did a feasibility study on what it would take to restore this property. And, of course, it was still in private ownership. And they did come up with recommendations. And one of the recommendations to the Angel family, it was owned by the Sam Angel family, who his mother was an Epstein. It was part of the Epstein plantation. They came up with a recommendation that in order to restore this property, it would take more than a private individual could probably do, and that it needed to be turned over to some public agency who would be eligible to apply for private funds. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they made several recommendations, and the Angel family, even though they were all the way down in Southeast Arkansas, had somehow become aware of our project in Pigot. And they said, well, we want Arkansas State University to take this on. And so the team that had done the feasibility study came to Arkansas State and said, will you agree to take this on? Well, by then we, you know, were a year into the opening of the Hemingway Pfeiffer Museum. And so we did agree to take that on. But probably at about the same time, we were also asked by the people in Tyronza to take on the Mitchell East Building, which had been the headquarters of the Southern Tenant Farmers Union mm-hmm. back in the 30s. And so we were really working on those two restorations at the same time. And we opened Southern Tenant Farmers Museum in 2006 and Lakeport in 2007. So as you can see, it was a little bit different time period. We became aware of Lakeport Plantation in 99. We agreed to get involved in maybe late 2000, and it took us until 2007 to get that restoration done because we had to apply for so many grants, and the grants that we got, because it was such an important structure, we got grants not only from the Arkansas Natural and Cultural Resources Council, but from the National Endowment for the Humanities and the Save America's Treasures Program. And all of those programs insisted that it be done right or they wouldn't put their money in it. So like, for instance, it sits kind of out in the middle of nowhere. And even though it originally had a wood shingle roof on it, we thought, well, we're not going to put a wood shingle roof on it. We're going to put, you know, a composite roof of some sort that looks like wood shingles, but would be fire retardant so that we don't, you know, risk the place catching on fire.
Right.
And the National Endowment and the Save America's Treasures Program said, absolutely not. You must put wood shingle roofs on there. They must be authentic. And so we did, but that also meant we had to invest significant money into a fire suppression system. So,
wow. So a lot of that was just trying to, you know, get the grant money to be able to do that.
Right. That's really where right. I probably spent the big bulk of my time, was constantly applying for grants to do these projects.
I'm talking with Dr. Ruth Hawkins, who's executive director of Arkansas Delta Byways and also is a director of the Arkansas State University Heritage Sites here on KASU. And so the Southern Tenant Museum, that came about around the same time, as you say. Tell us about that particular project, about the significance of that project in Tyronza.
Okay, well, I had never heard of that. I got a call from the Historic Preservation Alliance of Arkansas, and they said, we need for you to come and take a look at the Mitchell East Building in Tyronza. And I mm-hmm. said, what is the Mitchell East Building in Tyronza? And it turns out that in 1934, during the Depression, when a lot of it wasn't just the tenant farmers and sharecroppers that were out of work, but a lot of the landowners were losing their land during the Depression with bank failures and that kind of thing. And so it was really tough times for everybody. And one result of that is that landowners were really throwing tenant farmers and sharecroppers off their land and saying, hey, we don't need you. You know, we can't really pay you. There was a government program, the Agricultural Adjustment Act of 1933 came along, and it provided parity payments, subsidies to landowners, and they were supposed to divide these monies with their sharecroppers and tenant farmers. They were supposed to prorate out this money. Basically, it was kind of like some of the programs today where you had to leave out a third of your acreage, and then in return for you leaving out a third of your acreage, you got a government payment for that,
right?
A subsidy or a parity payment. And they were supposed to share that with the tenant farmers and sharecroppers. And many of them, some of them did, but many of them, instead of sharing it, they just got rid of them. They just got rid of their tenant farmers and sharecroppers. And if they needed extra help, they just hired day laborers that they didn't have to share the money with. And so one result was you had all these people that were just out on the roads, entire families that had been thrown out with all their belongings that were just kind of camping along the side of the road. And they came together in 1934 and asked, there were two fellows in Tyronza, H.L. Mitchell, who owned the dry cleaners, and Clay East, who owned the service station. These were two businesses that were in the same building together. And those two men, Clay East at the time was the sheriff. H.L. Mitchell was a socialist who was very involved in, helping out his fellow man and that kind of thing, and equality and equity and so forth. And so they came to the two of them and asked them for some help, and they all decided to form a union. So they formed a union in July of 1934. And the significance was it was the first agricultural union in the country that had black and white farmers in the same union, which was really unheard of in 1934, because you had a union where the officers of the union, one officer the year before might have been burning crosses in the yard of another member of the union.
Right.
So you had black and whites who came together to solve a common problem. You also had women that became leaders in the movement. And when they formed this union, they used the offices or the building of H.L. Mitchell and Clay East. They used that as their headquarters for the first year. They wound up moving their headquarters to Memphis because of all the threats of violence. I mean, people were shooting through their windows. They were threatening to lynch people that were involved with the union. It was really a rough time. And so the Mitchell East building, really this historic significance was that it was the headquarters for this union. Well, the people in Tyronza didn't know this because it had been kept really quiet, for years, because the people that had been in the union didn't want to bring it up to their children and grandchildren because they still were concerned about repercussions. And the people who had been landowners who had, many of whom had treated their tenant farmers unfairly, they certainly didn't want to bring it up. And so nobody talked about it. And nobody knew that this had all taken place there. Nobody remembered or talked about it until one day a PBS truck rolled into town, and one of the people there in town said, "What are you doing here in town?" And they said, "Well, we're shooting a documentary on the 1930s, and we're doing a documentary on, we're doing a segment on the Southern Tenant Farmers Union." And they said, "Well, what does that have to do with Tyronza?" And they said, "Well, it was started right here." And so that's when they said, "Whoa, we got to do something, to not let this chapter of history fade into history."
Dr. Ruth Hawkins is a director of Arkansas State University's Heritage Sites and also is the executive director of Arkansas Delta Byways, and joins us here on KASU. And that's how that was born.
Right, absolutely.
Fantastic. And so with these projects, how have you utilized students? I mean, have students been able to work on that? And I guess kind of piggybacking on that, was the Heritage Studies PhD program around that time, to help with some of these projects?
Well, yeah, that all kind of worked together, because in 1999, when we opened our first project, we did not have a PhD program in Heritage Studies. But around in the early 2000s, I guess in 2000 maybe, the university started looking at possibly adding more doctoral programs. We had the EDD in Educational Leadership, and that was our only doctoral program.
Right.
And we started looking around, and one of the suggestions was, well, we've got these heritage sites, and we've got this involvement along Crowley's Ridge and in the community, and we could use the community as a laboratory for a formal program in heritage studies. And so a number of people worked to come up with a Heritage Studies PhD program. A lot of people criticized us and said, well, you don't really need a PhD program. Why don't you just do a master's in Heritage Studies? And basically the position that we took as a university at the time was, no, we wanted this to be a PhD because we wanted to send a clear message that this was a research-based program, heavily research-based, and that here in the Delta, there is so little of the history and heritage that's written down or that's even known that it was a rich laboratory for our students to do research.
Right.
And so the Heritage Studies program came about kind of as a result of all of that, and we established that program in 2001, and we do use the heritage sites as laboratories. Our students help with the research on why the sites are significant. During all of our restorations, they have worked alongside of us as we have dealt with architects and contractors to see the decisions that go into restoring a site. They have worked with consultants on coming up with the interpretive plans and the exhibits for the sites. They work in the sites when they're opened to get experience in running a museum. So, yeah, there have been all kinds of ways that we have involved the Heritage Studies students directly, but it hasn't been just the Heritage Studies students. You know, we have classes all the time, not just from the university, but from all over the state. Like there's an ag policy class that comes every year. Bert Greenwald's ag policy class comes every year to the Southern Tenant Farmers Museum for them to get an understanding of that agricultural labor movement and the policies that went into that. We have communications students that come and check out all of our sites and look at how they've been treated in the news media. We've had graphic arts students involved with a lot of our projects. Of course, we've had literature classes that have used the Hemingway Pfeiffer site. We have a class from Hendricks College and a class from Lyon College that come regularly to use that as a laboratory. And I guess equally important, we focus very, very heavily on field trips, school field trips for elementary and secondary students. And it's a great way for them to learn about the history of the state. And, of course, we do professional development workshops for teachers because teachers are supposed to have so many credits in Arkansas history. Right. And so it's a good way for teachers to come and figure out how to incorporate some of this history into some of their lessons. So it really has been an educational laboratory, which is exactly what we wanted all along.
You know, and I love how you also have the public, like going back to the Hemingway Pfeiffer Museum, I love that you all have the writers' workshops that take place there. And that's a really cool idea.
It is a cool idea. We do two adult writers. The things that we do at Hemingway Pfeiffer are really phenomenal. We have two writers' workshops annually in the spring and in the fall. We also periodically do a veterans writers workshop, which is people, you know, that have been in the military, many of them writing memoirs about their experiences in the military. They don't necessarily have to be writing about that, but you know, we have a special retreat for them. We also have something called a reader's retreat, which is instead of going and writing, they come, they read three books that they're assigned in advance, and then when they come to the retreat, which is a Friday and Saturday, they have mentors for each of the three books they've read, and they do discussions of these books, and then they end it with a special banquet, and it's really a great way to involve people in reading and books and so forth. We have after-school workshops for gifted and talented students. We have all sorts of activities for area students, art shows, It's just really been phenomenal, the educational programming that we've been able to do there. And of course, that's one of the goals that we have for the future is really being able to implement the same level of programming at all three of the other sites as we have at the Hemingway Pfeiffer Museum.
And that is Dr. Ruth Hawkins, Executive Director of the Arkansas Delta Byways and the Executive Director of the Arkansas State University Heritage Sites. Hawkins will retire from Arkansas State at the end of this month after being at the university for over 40 years. And you can get caught back up by listening to last week's interview on our website at kasu.org. And for A-State Connections, I'm Jonathan Reeves.